Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable.
Friday.
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust. Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, what a group we have assembled this afternoon for a Friday Reardon Roundtable. Jane Duker is here, as usual. How are you, Jane?
Cold.
Yeah, it is cold. The sun is saving us, I think.
The sun is saving us, but it's a little chilly in the room, too.
Did you see my post? Well, this place is just ridiculous.
No, there's temperature control issues.
Yes, very much. In the entire building. But did you see my post this morning? I talked about this with Steve yesterday, and I had to verify it, because I'm all about the facts, Jane. You know
yes,
that.
Yes, oh, yeah, good. We like that.
High Ridge.
I've advised you long enough.
Okay, Rainford, you'll have your turn here. 19 degrees in High Ridge, Missouri. Oh, Carol is literally strangling Kevin Killeen right now, and
you know,
Jane
I
is getting a picture.
It.
I will be posting.
Wait, by
about
the way,
that.
What was the deal? All of a sudden, I heard Carol say, "Where's Kevin?" And then was he supposed to be in the newscast?
There was some okay. Minor. But glitch with the tape.
We're getting distracted here. Okay,
you're right. Back
19 degrees in High Ridge, Missouri. I don't really say Missouri. 38 degrees in Anchorage, Alaska this morning. How about that for a little juxtaposition?
Thanks
if
for
you will.
Sharing, Mark.
I know. Jean Evans is here. She is the chair of the Missouri Republican
Executive
Party.
Executive director.
Well, one of those things. How are you?
I'm
really?
Very
is
good.
Have I always been calling you chair? I thought it was always chair.
Chair is an elected position.
Who's the chair?
Her name is Kay Hofflander. It's an all-woman team over there.
Well,
so,
is she better than you? We can have her on the round table.
Wow. Thanks for coming.
She doesn't know me well enough. I'm just teasing.
Yeah, you know what? I'll pass that along, Mark.
I am teasing.
By the way, who is more powerful in the party, the chairman or the executive director?
I would say the executive director. She won't say it, but
I will say the chairwoman is the person in charge.
They're in charge, but I think the executive director does all the work.
Yeah, I guess I'm not up to speed on
the chiefs of staff kind of know how that works.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other voice here is Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff for the former mayor. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mark.
All right, Gene, let me start with you. We'll start with some local politics here. Your seat was up for grabs in the House, and it went to a Democrat. What happened there? We talked about this a little bit earlier, but is that a significant defeat for Republicans or not?
Well, it's been a Republican seat for a long time.
Did I ask you? I asked her.
Oh, you did. You said I'm going to start
my
Jane.
You said Jean.
I said Jean. No, we're going to have this problem. Jane.
So, okay, we knew it was going to be an uphill battle. Claire McCaskill won that seat by 19 points. Okay, 19 points. It's a special election. The energy is on the side of the minority party in a special election. A lot of money came in from out of state. We saw that a year and a half ago in the 97th where Mike Revis flipped a seat, won. And then, you know, 8 months later, candidate came along in a general and won by double digits. So it is, I was concerned for myself going into 2020 because the district is trending blue. I had to beat the top.
You mean if you would have run for re-election?
If I had run for re-election, I have to outperform the top of the ticket. I outperformed the top of the ticket by 14 points. That's not an easy thing to do. And to ask someone who's not an incumbent to do that. I mean, she worked very hard. And actually, I would say there are some good signs here because, you know, if Claire won by 19 and our candidate only lost by 8 in a special, I would say maybe the trend isn't quite as blue as some might
you,
like.
You would
think.
Agree. I think my liberal friends on the panel would agree that special elections are a little different, right? So
I
can
would.
You read
well, we're starting to see some trends.
Okay, well, let's talk about tea leaves and trends.
Well,
do you think they're there?
I also think, too, I mean, no offense because Jean knows I love her, but you know, that sounds like somebody who lost down in the city in a Democratic primary. You know, a loss is still a loss. And, you know, it was a Republican seat and we turned one. That doesn't happen often. So it's not like I'm crowing like, you know, the Democrats are taking over the world. But, you know, we flipped one. Can we keep it? That remains to be seen. But I do think there's some, you know, there's some stuff happening. And I think that, the energy level should be, you know, acknowledged. And, you know, we got our people out in a special election, and it was an open seat. It wasn't an incumbent. It was an open seat, and our people pulled it over, you know, and we flipped it.
So that, just to be clear, so I understand and people understand, but that person who won will be up for re-election next year, right?
That's right.
In another race because it was a special election.
Yeah, that's true. So I think, you know, again, it's a special election. The trend is blue. I think she has a better chance even in a re-elect just because it is such a blue district. But as far as a term, you know, I mean, again, a year and a half ago when they flipped one seat, it was going to be this wave in 18, and we didn't see a wave here. So I don't think it indicates any kind of a wave, but I certainly understand why the energy is on their side.
I have an update.
Yeah.
I got a text message from a Claire McCaskill campaign worker who said Claire did not win her seat by 19 points. They won by 8.
So that doesn't jive with what I got from the
county. Well, I just
county.
Feel like
yeah.
you should, you know, just make sure that...
Well, just so we were clear, we're talking about a state representative seat
correct.
Here, not a congressional
which
seat.
Which is a
so
small... Right.
I got to say, that just to be fair, if I were Gene, I would not be shaking in my boots about this as a trend in the state of Missouri. However, nationally, and I've been saying this for the last 2 years, educated voters in the suburbs are moving away from Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And all I hear from our friends like Mr. Lamping and others is, we don't need them. We're going to have such a turnout with our rural voters, and we don't need those Republicans. And I hope that Republicans continue to say, we don't need educated women from the suburbs in order to win, because that's good for us Democrats.
Well, I'm not saying that. And I will say the Missouri Republican Party is not saying that. And in fact, opening a victory office in St. Louis County a year ahead of the regular election says that we are very concerned about suburban women. We want to make sure that we're reaching them and we're messaging them. I am not. I don't think the governor is saying that, or he wouldn't have allowed me to be the executive director.
And you talked about outperforming the top of the ticket. You're going to have to outperform the top of the ticket in the suburbs, because nationally anyway, and I don't know about the 99th district and that sort of thing, but nationally a lot of educated suburban voters are tired of the drama. They're tired of the tweeting. They're tired of the division. And
they're also tired of impeachment.
Could they take it out against our party if we nominate the wrong person? Yes. But all we got to do almost is nominate a lamppost, and it seems like that's going be better than what we have right now.
We'll get into some of the presidential politics in future segments. But as far as the trends, and you know, you can break down some of these things that happened across the country. Kentucky, for example, I think that you look at that, it looks bad for Republicans. But Scott Jennings, who's a regular contributor, not only on my show but on CNN, he used to work for the Majority Leader McConnell. He basically, Matt Bevins was a guy who alienated teachers and the teachers
right.
union and parents and moms. So
yes.
that was one of his struggles in Kentucky. It would be hard for me to believe that. And I agree with you, Jeff. There is a trend, but the reason that trend matters when it comes to electoral politics is what it means in Pennsylvania, what it means in Michigan, because you don't anticipate that Kentucky or Missouri, even with the Trump hatred out there, could flip to the D's, do
no,
you?
No, but those places have, it kind of gets to what Gene was saying, is the energy. And there are a lot of moderate voters like me who, you know, it's hard to get me excited because I'm like on the one hand, but the other hand, but the third hand, but the fourth hand. But when it comes to beating Donald Trump, I, as a moderate, am fired up. And there are a lot of people, including independents, sort of what used to be leaner Republicans, who are just tired of it all. And they will turn out to vote. And so if this is, you know, a turnout election, as long as I've made this caveat before, as long as we don't decide
right.
to go far left. Now, if we go far left and we have somebody who's just as scary as Donald Trump, I don't know who's going to win, but as long as we have somebody who's not as scary as Donald Trump, there are a lot of these and I know you're not one of them, the people that you're not scaring your suburban voters, nor is the governor, but you're going to have to in other states outperform the president, because I think he is scaring suburban
voters.
Well,
who are you scared of on your side when you say is scary? I mean, because they all look scary to me, but who would you?
Yeah, I would think that, first of all, I don't think there's any chance that that the wacky professor is going to
Warren?
No, well, that's who I think probably would be.
Wait, who's the wacky professor?
Tulsi Gabbard?
The,
oh no! Oh.
The
Not Bernie.
Yeah. Bernie. Oh. I always think of him as sort of like a
mad scientist.
Yeah, mad scientist uncle. Sure.
Kind of looks like that.
But I don't think it'll be Bernie if for no other reason his health scare. So the one candidate who has the chance to get it that would be a big problem for us would be Elizabeth Warren. Yes. I mean, and as far as turning out our base, I kind of admire her for having all these policy papers, but it's hard to get people fired up with policy papers. I'd be getting people fired up for I'm the one who's going to go and drive that, you know, that nincompoop out of the White House. But yeah, I do think that we have candidates. If we nominate the wrong candidate, it'll be a 50-50 call like it was last time, and we won't know until, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
And to Jeff's point, look, we saw the polling this week in these states that matter, and the one person that Trump is at least even with or beats is Elizabeth Warren. It's funny how many Democrats know that. Jane, you and I have talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Nearly every Democrat that's been on the panel has sort of agreed with that, but she keeps surging in the polls.
Well, but timing's everything, and I think you know, I think we'll see how Iowa goes and how other places. I mean, people are going to start focusing. The politicos, we're way into this. The people are yet to be fully engaged.
But we're less than 2 months away from caucuses now.
I agree. But I think anything before Christmas is just.
So what happens if Joe Biden ends up fourth in Iowa, which is kind of where he is right now, isn't it? Or
but a lot of people who lose Iowa don't, you know, can still end up getting the nomination.
Well, yeah, Rick Santorum won Iowa.
I mean, the one thing I can say about our party all the way across, and we do actually have a few conservatives, but at least the moderates, the liberals, and what I guess I would call the progressives, is the one thing that unites us is we got to beat this guy. And I think that's where you're going to see coalescing in the Democratic Party eventually. You kind of got to give the candidates a chance to see who's going to perform and not perform. But at some point, I mean, everything I hear from people I talk to and everything I see in the polling, I see in the liberal media, is we all agree. We disagree on Medicare for all, but we all agree we got to get this guy out of the White House. And I do think the party is more likely. It's not a sure thing, but more likely to not to coalesce around that.
And I think that as even her Medicare for All is getting vetted and people are starting to get the numbers on what this is going to look like, even Democrats are getting nervous. So, I expect the jockeying. I think the top five is likely to be the top five.
Well, you think it's going to be Biden? Is that your guy that you think can win?
I'm not even positive about that.
At the moment, I think Pete's too young, but at the moment, I do think it's Biden. And I think Biden, under other circumstances, would not be the guy, but Biden seems to be our best chance to beat Trump. So maybe his job, sometimes this is what elections are. His job is to beat this guy. He does his 4 years and the country, you know, goes in a completely different direction out of that. Sometimes that's what an election is about. And the one thing about the Republicans is we know that the Republicans are going to say this election's about Trump. Well, if they want to make it about Trump, I hope we want to make it about Trump. And then when he's gone, then maybe we can recalibrate everything.
All right, hang on. We're coming back with more of the roundtable. We have not talked about the apparent newest entrant into the field, Mike Bloomberg. We'll talk about that, maybe the implications. Jeff Sessions is going to run for Senate in Alabama. We'll talk impeachment and a whole lot more here as we get through the hour.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, Reardon Roundtable, Friday afternoon. We are joined in the studio by Jean Evans. She is the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party. If you hear that she is the chairman, I don't know who would have spread that news or anything like that, but she is not the chairman.
You are fake news.
Thank you, Jean. We got that straightened. And also Jane Duker, who was a former chief of staff for Governor Holden. That was 2 decades ago or something like that.
Long
and Jeff Rainford.
Ago.
How long, by the way, has it been since you've been out of that gig?
So I left in, I want to say 5 years ago. Yeah, I got to come up with a different title because people aren't even going to remember who any of us were.
Well, Gene just asked you during the break, what are you doing now? And you said, I'm a consultant. I want to be a consultant.
You know
what
that means?
I want to be a consultant.
Sitting in a beanbag chair with a gin and tonic in your hand.
I'll tell you what it means.
Beanbag chair. All right.
I'll tell you what it means because I've been with them. It means Aberdeen, Peavely, Crescent Farms, Gateway.
Anbrier.
Okay.
Anbrier. What's the country club in Chesterfield, too, that we played at?
Meadowbrook.
Meadowbrook, yeah.
Nice.
We played all those this summer. All right, impeachment. Jane, go.
Well, it's funny because you and Greg Keller sat here and dogged the crud out of me. Oh, impeachment, you're so silly. And I'm like, oh, here we are. I hate being right again, but I am.
Well, no, we didn't think you were.
Oh, you did. And I will get the tape.
What did we think?
Oh, that's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think it could happen.
Whoa. I'm going to stick with that. It's never. You realize Richard Nixon was not impeached. You realize that, right?
So he resigned.
Right. Donald Trump. Maybe he'll resign.
Impeached.
But you think he'll be found guilty in the Senate?
Well, impeachment, by the way, is not what impeachment is. Impeachment is if the House were to vote it.
So we're kind of arguing over semantics.
Well, that's
going to happen. No. We're not, because they totally went on record saying I was a fool, and here it comes.
I stand by that. You're a fool, but maybe not on that issue.
Of course you do, because you're wrong again. But I think. You know, the impeachment stuff, it's getting worse. I mean, the more stuff comes out.
The John Bolton stuff today, all right? So it appears as if John Bolton, who is or has been someone who conservatives have looked up to over the years. He apparently is willing to testify about more than just that transcript is what we're hearing today.
Yeah.
That could be something, Gene. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's not as bad. Maybe he's going to reveal that things were not quid pro quo. I'm not sure.
I always worry about a setup, too, where he sort of like has these little leaks to make it sound like he's going to come in and drop a dime on the guy. And then he comes in and the media makes a big deal out of it. Then he comes in and defends
the
guy.
That's what keeps happening. We keep hearing these horrible headlines, and it all sounds, it's like, if this is true, this is really serious. And even Republicans say that if this is true, this is serious, and this could be blah, blah, blah. And then we found out the real story, and it really isn't that big of a deal. And it's like a long soap opera. Like, you can turn away for 2 weeks and you turn it back on and nothing has really happened. Some new drama is there. People get all worked up and excited, but nothing has changed. There's no real evidence that he did anything impeachable where he should be removed from office.
Well, except that you have career diplomats saying that he was, like, basically blackmailing people, saying, you go after my political friends or I'm going to withhold aid. I mean,
okay, Adam Schiff, that's not exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, but that's what the career diplomats are saying, that you will not get the aid unless he publicly goes on TV or wherever.
Diplomats who were contacting Democratic staffers to get their talking points correct before they went and testified before Adam Schiff. I mean, this has been
the party of Devin Nunez is going to make that claim? Wow. I mean, seriously, everybody's got their little partisans, but these are career people who are under oath, whereas the Trump administration, they won't go under oath. So I trust people who are under penalty of perjury more than I trust people who refuse to go under
oath. None of their testimony has been that damning.
I guess we'll find out.
Here's what history. In Watergate, it started out where President Nixon had widespread support, and mm-hmm. the polls showed no interest in him being impeached. And by the end, the guy was done, as the evidence comes out. If that's the way this goes, then it will be a game changer. Now, I kind of agree, as somebody who thinks that he is the worst president since Millard Fillmore. I hope the guy fails, but I still have said from the beginning, and I haven't changed, that we need to beat the guy in 2020, and I think we very well can. Right. If the Democrats, when this goes into the public phase, carry themselves like statesmen, and they bring out evidence, even if it doesn't rise to the level of impeachment,
but they're transparent,
they can do real damage to the guy. If on the other hand, we kind of do the Trump version, we become the Democratic version of Trump in this whole thing, then I think
badly.
It could backfire.
I agree. In the public, it matters. I mean, and so
it does.
I think that's where this is won or lost. It's a political process. Let's face it. It's a political process. So it's going to be up to the Democrats to make a case to the American people that something has changed or something is awful. So, I mean, while I think that what is going on in the Trump administration is abhorrent and is eroding our democracy and is the worst thing ever, and I think he has committed crimes, it all comes down to whether the public believes that. And so it's going to be on Democrats to do that.
But there will be political outcome without it being impeached, too. Because impeachment, at every level, we have a thing called recall at the local level. And I always said, people don't want the results of elections overturned unless something really awful happens. So it is, and generally when it comes to impeachment, you need both Republicans and Democrats for it to rise to that level. And clearly in this day and age, it's not going to happen. However, again, if the Democrats carry themselves with dignity and do it right, and they present a really strong case, they can hurt this guy without impeaching him.
But do you think that's a serious question here? Do you think the strong case is going to involve a whole lot more evidence? outside of this phone call. Obviously, if the diplomats say something, if John Bolton says something.
The evidence in public, because you are correct. Yes. So far, we're seeing transcripts and, but when, remember Watergate, my mother, I was 13, I think, at the time. She watched those hearings with Sam Ervin every day, and it was so damning. If all of that had happened back then were transcripts, he might have survived the thing.
Exactly.
But they watch these people come in, people from the administration, say these incredibly awful things. It can do some damage to the guy. Now, do I think he'll get impeached? No, but can it do damage? If Democrats can just rein in their hatred for the guy and do this with some dignity, they can hurt the guy.
Here's the president on this today.
I'm not concerned about anything. The testimony has all been fine. I mean, for the most part, I never even heard of these people. I have no idea who they are. They're some very fine people. You have some never-Trumpers. It seems that nobody has any first-hand knowledge. There is no first-hand knowledge. And all that matters is one thing, the transcript. And the transcript is perfect. In no cases have I been heard. In no cases that I see have I been heard.
Yeah, so he's not wavering from that. He thinks the phone call is fine. The transcript
perfect.
Is fine. Well, he
perfect.
Said perfect
that's
before.
Those are the words he uses. Perfect. I mean, that's his style.
Yep,
yeah, that's what
perfect.
He does. But I think, you know, what we're talking about here and what people are on to is that this really is a political process. Like you said, they're trying to damage Trump in the eyes of the public so he doesn't win in 2020. Because when you have this late in the race, Bloomberg jumping in because nobody has confidence in any of your other leaders, it's clear that you don't have a candidate that can beat him. So they're trying to damage him. And the public is smart. The public is going to be onto this. And in these swing districts where it really matters, this could really hurt Democrats. It's a risk. They could win. They could damage him. Right. But it could also come back and bite him.
The problem for the president is he whatever you want to call it, and I won't be totally mean about it, but he bends the truth so much that there are a lot of independents moderate Republicans who are not going to be or who are going to be more than willing to believe that the guy did something like trade off American interest in order to protect his own interest, because that's kind of what we've heard for the last 2 years. It's not like you're taking a Boy Scout and trying to make him into something he's not. You're taking a guy who everybody, even Republicans, will admit has a hard time with the truth. And now all of a sudden you're saying that independents and soft Republicans are going to believe every word he says. I think they're ready to believe it. And not enough that he's going to get impeached, but enough that it could hurt him.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
Back on the roundtable, Jane Duker, Gene Evans, and Jeff Rainford. Mike Bloomberg is dabbling with getting into this race. I mean, realistically, what effect, Jane, I'll start with you here, would that have on the Democrats? He, by the way, he's a year older, a year younger than Biden. I mean, he's pretty much Biden's age, too. So what would be the point of a Mike Bloomberg campaign?
I mean, I think it's really hard at this point. I really do. I mean, maybe he's got the infrastructure from all the work he's been doing on guns and stuff, and he's got people all over the country. So, I mean, you know, it's hard to jump in and get that structure built, but if he's got, and he's got money, so, I mean, you know, he can, I guess, use that. I do think it's hard. I think he's trying to get into the moderate wing.
Well, that would be a joke because he's not a moderate. I'll tell you that right now.
On fiscal stuff, he is. I mean, the gun stuff, he's not, but the fiscal stuff, he is.
Mike Bloomberg is a big fraud, and he is.
What's your opinion? I'm confused.
Well, here's the president's opinion. Here we go.
So I've known Michael Bloomberg for a long time. If you go back early on, he said a lot of great things about Trump, but I know Michael. He became just a nothing. He was really a nothing. He's not going to do well, but I think he's going to hurt Biden, actually. But he doesn't have the magic to do well.
All right. So what would the realistic effect of a Mike Bloomberg run be on the Democratic field, Jeff Rainford?
Well, one, I hope that it actually wakes up the vice president. So, you know, maybe he doesn't take for granted that he's going to.
You mean Joe Biden?
Yeah, Joe
okay,
Biden.
All right, just making sure.
Well, Pence needs
wake
that
up,
too,
sleepy
let's
Joe.
Be honest.
Yeah,
I
got to say,
could
be either one
too.
Of them. But in this case, the Democratic vice president, Joe Biden, that maybe, you know, it kind of wakes him up a little bit that he can't run such a careful campaign, that all he has to do is not lose, that he actually has to run a winning campaign. And then secondly, if Biden does in fact flame out and the choice is between Warren
and Bloomberg, I think there's a pretty good chance because we, again, what I said before, we're united around beating the president. I think there's a chance it could be him. And I do think with his resources, he has friends all over the country.
He really does.
Political friends
all
over the country.
Spent a lot of time doing that.
He's got the money. He is not going to care what names the president calls him. It, one-on-one, I tell you what, I'll take my chances with Bloomberg. Now, we're a long way from that point.
Bloomberg is actually rich. Real, for real, he's rich.
Yeah. We're a long way from that point, but
it does. I think it's
as somebody who is as anybody but Trumper, it did not bother me that he was going to get in and split votes and end up having like somebody come from last place and win because of the vote splitting.
Are you surprised that we haven't had more candidates? I actually thought Kamala Harris would get out of the race this week because the writing is kind of on the wall. She's pulled out of New Hampshire. I think she's focusing on Iowa, but we had Beta get out a week ago. Aren't we going to start even before Thanksgiving, have some of these candidates say, okay,
I would think
enough
so.
Enough is enough?
I would think so. I am surprised that there's some hanger. But, I think everybody's hoping for that Iowa surprise.
Here's the president. Speaking of surprises, Jeff Sessions in the race for the Senate in Alabama.
Will you endorse Jeff Sessions in his Alabama Senate run?
Well, I haven't gotten involved. I saw he said very nice things about me last night, but... we'll have to see. I'll have to see. I haven't made a determination. Yeah, go ahead. I don't even think about it.
All right, have you forgiven him for the Russia investigation? He did not like that, obviously. Gene, what's your impression of how that might work in Alabama? Jeff Sessions, obviously, he's got name recognition. But if Trump says no Jeff Sessions, people are probably going to follow in Alabama, don't you think?
Yeah, well, it depends on who else there is, but it's a very red state. He's got name ID. It looks like he is looking for the Trump support. He started saying nice things about him. Trump acknowledged that. It wasn't a hard no. So if Trump even stays neutral, I think Sessions can win. But if he goes after him, I think it makes it very difficult in Alabama.
The president, despite going after people, seems to be practical when it comes to the chances of people winning elections.
That's,
I think,
right,
is sort of summarizing what your point is.
Yes.
There. So if he sees, and we've seen people, it's amazing to me, kiss and make up with this president.
Right.
Ted
well,
Cruz,
just say
for
nice
example.
Things to him. That's all he wants. It was very clear. He told the press, he said some nice things about me. That's probably what it's going to take for him to get it.
Well, my question would be, because Alabama is clearly a deep red state, so the Republican's going to win the election. The question is, can he win the nomination if the president is either lukewarm or against him or for somebody else?
I think if he's neutral, he's okay. If he's against him, it's going to be tough. I don't know how, and again, it depends on his opponent. But if Trump is against you in Alabama, I don't know how you win. I really don't. And
I don't either. I don't think he can.
No, but it sounds like he's hinting at least by those comments, that maybe he is not against Sessions. And if I'm telling you, even if he's neutral, if he doesn't get involved, Sessions can win. And if he supports him, it's a shoo-in.
I think Gene's right about that. Let's
get
local here.
He's worried about the Senate, too. He's got to keep the Senate. And he doesn't lose another seat.
That's a really big deal. I mean, I keep saying, we're talking about presidential politics, and that obviously that's hugely important. But the Senate, I mean, the Democrats have a real opportunity.
We're not going to win Alabama, though.
No. But I do think that the map is more favorable to us this time than it was last time. And so I do think that we... You know, that better be our fail-safe. And I do think we're going to do better in some statewide races. And I think that we have the possibility of taking the Senate.
Okay, John Belmar was on my show a few days ago. He finally did some interviews in the aftermath of that big jury verdict involving Sergeant Wildhaber. I'm sorry, a couple of weeks ago, Jane. Does John Belmar, or should he step down? I don't think he's going to, but there's been pressure on him to resign from some quarters. Sam Page, the new county executive, stuck by him. He says he's not a quitter. I don't think what happened, there were big mistakes that were made, and it's an embarrassment. And look, he's the leader, so it goes up to the top. But should it cost him his career and his reputation?
I mean, I think it all depends on the response. And I think that I think what people are waiting to see is the police department going to respond in a way that it needs to? And look, and I want to be clear. There's a difference between, the four or five people in the top brass who made these decisions and all the line officers. And I will tell you, representing the line officers, they want to make it very clear that on a day-to-day basis, this doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, the rank and file, they're frustrated. They think this is a white shirt.
Like,
this is a white shirt issue, right?
Right, and we're going to be doing the training
right,
because the white shirts made some bad decisions.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it is important that you have to set the tone that it is going to, because this one is an at the top issue, that the at the top issues are going to be taken care of. And that is really important because, look, the line officers are the ones that go out and they don't want the public telling them that they're racist and they're homophobic and they're all the things that, you know, are being splattered all over the paper. So I do think that he has the possibility to make things better, but there has to be real change. And real change, even from the rank and file, saying there has to be real change, the way decisions are made, the transparency of decisions that are made, and going forward. So I think it's the jury is still out, but I think that transparency and change has to happen, or it's the drumbeat's going to get louder.
Rainford?
Yeah, so I think he should be given a chance to fix it, and I'm fine with that. I think from what I hear, the issues aren't just with gay officers. The African-American community is not 100% in love with the police department. And, you know, he comes across as kind of an old school guy in a very, very modern Twitter world. And so I think it could be tough for him, but I think he should get a shot. But Jane, it is the officers, the sergeants and the patrol people who are out on the streets. They're the ones who, if there's a problem, their behavior has to change. If you want to get, people don't get a chance to go meet the chief or the lieutenant colonels or whatever. It's the frontline officers that they meet. And if there's a problem in the department, that's where the brass have to get it fixed.
Right. But I think that the line officers are the ones that are being looked at because they are interacting with the public of saying, Are you homophobic because of what's happened?
Right.
So it reflects poorly on all of them. And they probably didn't have anything to do with it. Now they have to go to training. They didn't have anything to do with it. And now they're being held sort of responsible and accountable for decisions that they had no say in.
Right. Now, if there's police behavior, we had another police officer that pled guilty in the city. If there are specific
that was related to the undercover protests. Cop that was
right.
beaten
Absolutely.
At the protest, right?
And so if there is certain cop behavior that needs to be taken care of, again, the brass needs to do that, and they need to do that in a way that gives.
Well, if all we do is have the top brass undergo training or whatever, I don't really see the point of anything positive coming out of this. I mean, I think the chief was on TV the other day and he did say something about I don't know if he used the words wake up call, but we have to relook at how we do everything. And
correct.
If I were relooking at everything, certainly great. Let's do something different with the commanders. But I mean, we've got to really look at what are people saying and maybe listen a little more carefully when African-American people say that we don't feel like we're being treated fairly or what happened in Ferguson. And I don't want to start that argument over, but from their point of view was not handled
I've been at all the county council meetings, and the people coming in, there are certain officers that they have trouble with. But most of them, in fact, the police moms came in to testify at the county council hearing, and the protesters were like, look, we are not saying this about every single cop, but we want the bad apples taken care of, and we want them taken care of quickly, and the brass needs to do that.
Right.
And Jane, I have made it clear everywhere I go to whoever I talk to, I am 100% pro-police. The problem I have with the rank-and-file police in the union is they ought to be like the Marines, the few and the proud, and if you can't live up to our standards, we're going to wash you out. But they defend the indefensible, the unions do, and they protect everybody,
Everybody's entitled to have representation, and if that includes the union, I mean, if you want to be pro-labor or not be pro-labor, that's fine. But pro-labor means that you defend your guys.
You're mixing and mashing, but you've got to take the bad with the good. If
Absolutely.
You're going to defend the bad officers, then you're going to have a hard time saying, oh, we have all these good officers.
Well,
I love it when the Democrats argue.
Right.
What do we need to be here for?
I mean, but they're entitled to have lawyers, and because a union
provides lawyers. I didn't say they shouldn't have lawyers.
To know what you're saying we're defending.
What I'm saying is when the union defends behavior by what I would do if it were up to me, if I was in the union, is I would figure out a way, and I guess I could sit down and think about it, but nobody's asked me, so that we would want to build the brand the same way the Marines do. If you're a 90-pound weakling or you are a bad character, the Marines don't want you. We should have the same kind of thing going on in our police department. I agree with you that 98% of the officers or 96 or whatever it is do a really great job, but those 4 or 5 make it really rough for everybody else.
All right, hang tight.
The union can't fire people. Only the department can.
Hang tight. We got to come back with more. I do like it when the, interest squabbles take place.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
Well, I got some good news And some bad news for this panel. The good news is you guys get Fritz's frozen custard. The bad news is that, you know, they're coming to an end of the season, but they're still open. Good time to stock up on some quarts. We have cinnamon roll, which is the flavor of the day, vanilla with the sweet flavor of cinnamon. Gene's daughter is watching the round table today. Poor young lady. She's suffering through this, but she can at least have some Fritz's frozen custard. The jack-o'-lantern, which is pumpkin, caramel, and pecans, and the Fritz's chocolate overload, chocolate with chocolate chips and hard shell chocolate. Usually these things, like Jane would be eating one at this time, but she's gotten all healthy and trying to lean out for the holidays.
No, but today, though, I think I might
have she's having one today.
Yeah,
she is having one today.
Do it today.
All right, speed round here. Just a few minutes left. We had the Blues are super hot right now, which is really fun. But let's talk just, Jeff, I'll start with you on the Cardinals extensions. It's so funny because as soon as this happened the other day, there are, and I have a fair amount of Cardinals fans spread out over the country. I think we all do, right? I get texts from the Mo haters, you know, man, they gave this, they blame Mo for everything. Made the NLCS, blame Mo. It doesn't matter. Now, I get that we have high expectations here, but I think there's something with this team that you can build upon for 2020.
They have a bazillion good arms. Now, some of them, you know, two of them, Gomer and their closer hurt their arms. But they have so many good arms, and that's what they're building the team around. That's why I think they got hurt, and their offense was so bad and got completely shut down, is they're building the team around pitching, and they have a gazillion good arms, both at the major league level, on the disabled list, and at the minor league level. I'm perfectly fine with the direction they're going. They've got a direction. Stick to it. Don't bounce around based on what, you know, the fans say.
My only concern would be, you know, they're going toward a philosophy with hitting, with the analytics, and I think that they're saying that this is going to work over time, but there's going to be a patience level that is going to be lost with Cardinals fans if they don't start hitting the ball. I mean, the stat that jumps out to me from this season, and I'm shocked that they even got to the NLCS when you hear this, I think it's like 33% of the games they scored fewer than two runs.
Their offense was terrible, but their pitching was really good. Hey, I got to throw in an unrelated sports thing. Last week was such a major improvement for Mizzou over the previous 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, you know, boy. Jeff and I are the same way. I wish I could. It was a bye week for those of you not paying attention.
Wow,
but the thing,
it's hurtful.
I'm down right now on the
so
Zoo.
You're down on bye weeks? I'm not.
Oh, no, I'm right
on bye weeks. Was just the right time. Right. I'm so depressed. I thought,
I don't know what to say.
Wyoming notwithstanding, I thought that, hey, they're really rolling. They got this kid at quarterback. They might lose the Georgia game and might even have a chance. And then those 2 weeks,
wheels have come off, unfortunately. Yeah, it's ugly. And, you know, there's a case to be made that they might not win too many more here the rest of the season. Time is running out. Now we have basketball. You have any hope for Mizzou basketball, Rainford?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't follow it as much as football. I'm more of a football person, but I think Konzo is building something here. I'm also kind of excited. Again, I'm not a basketball guy, but it seems like SLU and Travis Ford got something going.
Yeah. Illinois. I mean, Rise of the Billiken.
My concern would be of the three programs in the area, Illinois, SLU, and Mizzou, that Mizzou's probably the lower tier right now. Mm-hmm. Now, I like some of the kids that are coming back. I really like this Mark Smith kid who was a little banged up at the end of last season. So I want to see what happens with the team, but there has to be a step forward for Konzo Martin in this team because I've said this before, last year's team was no better than a Kim Anderson team. It really wasn't.
No, there was no difference.
No, Jeff, it really wasn't.
Kim Anderson's
teams
were helpless.
Well, but I mean,
no worse than last year.
At some point, you're accountable for the lack of results.
No, he has to win.
Yeah. He does.
All right, well, we've wrapped up another stunning rendition of the Reardon Roundtable here on a Friday
afternoon.
And Kevin
Colleen is still alive.
Yeah, going back to the beginning
still has
of the
a
hour.
Smile on his face.
I know.
Was trying to, I guess get Kevin to be part of the newscast, and he had disappeared. So there was some strangling that goes on, and we put that up. Jane put that on Twitter if you want to follow, at Jane Duker, at Mark Reardon, KMOX. Gene Evans, the executive director of the State Republican Party. I'll never get that title wrong again. We're going to let you stay, too. That other person, I'm good with you, Gene. You did a fine job this afternoon. Thank you for coming in. Jeff Rainford, haven't seen you on the golf course in like 3 weeks, so unfortunately, I might retire for the year, though, because I ended up with two good rounds, so there's a part of me that's like, or maybe I'll just never play again.
No, you got to keep playing at least till you get your first hole in one. Then you might want to just walk off the golf course.
How about Mike Maddux? Talk about that during the division? No, it was during the NLCS.
NLCS,
he gets two holes in one.
Yep. Right.
Unbelievable.
Didn't
all right,
help us, though.
Jane's going to hang out. You know, I was coming in. I think you might have met my friend Brad Schiff before. Steve Schiff was a big news anchor here in St. Louis many decades ago. Brad works for Leica Animation, stop motion animation in Portland. They've had lots of great movies. Missing Link this year, Paranorman. He's in for the St. Louis International Film Festival.
Awesome.
I think I'm going to see Mr. Sterling K. Brown tonight at the screening of Waves at the film festival. He's in for a cancer benefit tomorrow as well. So big weekend for movies, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. We have number one songs audio cut of the day. Rainford, good to see you off the golf course, if you will. Gene, great to see you. Jane's hanging out. We're back in a moment.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.